Hey everyone, it's Michelle.
And Brayden.
And this is Spooky Shit. This week, we are going to be talking about people who have disappeared. I'm going to start out by talking about the Millbrook twins.
And then I'm going to talk about Kyren Horman.
Warning, this episode may contain graphic details. Listener discretion is advised.
All right, before we start though, how you doing, Brayden?
I am good.
Any exciting news?
I finally started cutting. I think I talked about it.
Oh, yeah. You said you were going to... Oh, wait. You said you practiced and you cut your finger.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
But now have you been practicing more?
Yes. We've been practicing more. We've done 3 haircuts and we're working on a 4th one.
Mannequins so far, right?
Yeah, mannequins. All mannequins.
Are you bleeding all over these mannequins, too?
No. No, I haven't cut myself since that first time.
Good.
But, yeah, the first cut we learned, it was kind of like a mullet, which I kind of struggled. Though I actually did decent, considering it was my first one.
Yeah.
The second one, I did really well with. It was just kind of layers, but it was like, I don't know how to explain it. It was layers, but it looks nice, like, rounded.
Okay.
To, like, fix, or I mean, match your head shape.
Like a bob almost?
Almost, but it's not a one length. A bob would be considered a one length.
A layered bob.
Yeah, sort of.
We call it a robber.
And then the third one we did, which I kind of struggled on, was a comb over.
Oh, that seems like it'd be actually really hard.
The actual, like, comb over on top, I got that right away, but what I struggled with was the sides.
Mm-hmm.
Because, like, we had to actually, like, cut it with shears. But I was, like, telling Alaris that I feel like the only people that would want, like, a shear cut would probably be, like, older gentlemen. Because otherwise, yeah. I feel like most people that get comb-overs, like, they use clippers. Like, they usually want it shorter.
I was going to say, they probably want clippers. You could even do, like, longer hair with clippers, no? Not, like, really long, but...
Yeah,
that's weird to use shears for. I mean, I guess you have to know how to do like everything.
Yeah, you have to learn how to do it. But yeah, that's what I was telling her. Because I mean, I have a comb over, but I usually like fade it. So
mm-hmm. Yeah, Robert does the same thing.
Yeah, so
he's never used scissors for it.
Yeah, I mean, they use scissors for the top to like trim it and everything, but
besides, no.
But yeah, I learned how to do that, and then yesterday we finally like turned on our clippers, and I was like. So excited.
This is gonna be your thing.
I think it is, because I felt like so much more comfortable with the clippers versus the shears.
Hell yeah, let's go.
And I literally like I did pretty like I we didn't finish the cut, but like I did get like half of the head and it did look like super like
clean
and I was like, wow.
Look at you go.
But yeah, it's fun. I'm like really excited to learn more.
Nice. When are you going to get more practice with the clippers?
Probably next week. Yeah, I think the rest of the week. Well, I don't even know. Yeah, I'm assuming because we just... So what they do, I think they start off by showing us how to use the shears and like the different techniques.
Mm-hmm.
And then now we're going into clippers and we're learning how to do clipper over comb.
Okay.
And then... I think he's going to show us how to use the actual, like, clip-on, like, the guards.
Oh, nice.
And then, yeah, I don't know.
And then you're opening up your own shop.
Well, and then, no, and then we're going to have to learn how to shave, even though I kind of already know.
That's good that you already know, though. You're not going into it blindly, like, you may have more with the cutting.
Yeah,
true. Hey, how cool. Are you going to shave someone's head to practice?
I don't know about head, but actually for my final, I do need to like give a haircut and a shave to someone.
If you want to do my undercut, I could volunteer. I was like, maybe not all of it.
I have to do a shave though.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know about that. You can shave the peach fuzz on my face. I'll grow it out extra long for this. It doesn't get that long. But I do have unusually long facial hair.
Do you?
Strange. Yeah, on like
fuss?
Yeah, on like my jawline. And I get really long neck hairs that my name in like old school RuneScape is Little Billy Goat because Robert makes fun of my hairs here and says I look like a little Billy Goat.
That's funny.
They're like long and blonde, so you don't usually notice. But then in the sun, it's like, what the fuck is happening on her neck?
I have some like pretty long. They're pretty light too, though. Like yeah. I can only see them in the sun. Like when I'm in the car, I like look at my neck and then I see some and I'm like, oh my God.
You're a little Billy Goat.
And then I kind of like have been letting my mustache grow. And then my mom yesterday, she saw it because we were at school. And she saw it in the sun. She was like, oh my God. She's like, bigaton. Which means like, you have a big mustache. Or you have a big mustache. And I was like, stop. I was like, it's all patchy though.
That's, I feel like that's a rite of passage for trans men though, is the weird patchy mustache.
Yeah, I was like, it's super
light. Everyone like, has to have it.
It's really like kind of dark and like kind, not full, but like foolish in the corners. But then like right above my lip, it's like, or under my nose, it's like super light and like barely any hairs.
I don't know if I'm tripping, but I feel like I see a little bit of a shadow on the sides. Or if I'm just trying to see it now. It's honestly kind of blurry. You're like, stop. Anyway, zoom.
Let me get closer.
Let me get up in that camera. That's exciting.
I know.
Your voice does sound deeper, per usual.
Thank you. I'm officially 5 months on T.
How the fuck is time going by so quickly?
I don't know, but I like feel like it.
You just started. How cool.
Woo-woo.
Woo-woo. Is there a certain point for tea when it's like this month or this year is when like it's the most crazy point, you know?
I don't think so because it affects everyone differently. So like people hit different, I guess, milestones at different times.
Yeah. You're hitting these milestones early, it feels like.
It kind of does.
Yeah.
But I mean, I guess it's normal. Well, I've seen, I was actually like watching videos of some, like, you know, the trans guys that do updates.
Yeah.
And I guess it can get deeper. Like I heard one guy's and then like from when he started and then like 5 months and then like to a year. And by a year, it sounded like still a little like deeper. I was like, oh shit.
Yeah, you're not done. It's like every week I feel like your voice sounds a little deeper.
I'm halfway there.
You got a ways to go. I wasn't sure how deep you'll get. Because like someone that I like play games with and that's also on my stream, she's a trans woman. And she was talking about, she hasn't started like actually taking HRT. Yeah, hormones. And she said that it's like the 2 year mark is apparently like when it's like fucking huge, huge gains for HRT, I guess.
Oh, wow.
So that's why I was like, is that a thing where you're like 1 year in, everyone's just like significantly changing all of a sudden?
Well, I mean, maybe for trans women, it works like a little differently as well.
Mm-hmm. She was, like, sending me videos of people taking pictures of themselves every day. And it'd be so funny because, like, every 6 months, I'd be like, whoa, wait, this and the last person, like, last picture, two different people. I'm so confused right now. You take videos of it, right?
I take videos of myself.
Okay, good.
I should take pictures as well.
I bet if you look at videos, you could see a difference in your face shape.
I think so. Well, I was showing, because I was, like, talking at school. We were talking about, like, buzz cuts and stuff and you know how only some people can like pull it off and stuff.
Yeah.
And I told them that I buzzed my head and I just like pulled up a picture and then they were like, wow, like your face looks different. And then I was like, oh, let me show you an older picture. And he was like, oh shit, because my like everyone knows at school.
Yeah,
or mostly everyone. And it's funny because only the teachers know my like legal name.
Oh, your
everyone knows. Yeah. Everyone else knows me as Brayden.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was like funny that he like saw the picture and he was like, oh shit, like your face is literally like changing. And I was like, oh. I was like, cool.
That makes sense. But yeah, I don't notice because I see you every week.
Yeah.
But also, I guess, you always sit with the mic blocking your jawline, which I feel like could be the most noticeable part. Oh my God. Significantly different. I haven't seen your jaw in so long.
I mean, I can't really tell, but maybe other people can.
Yeah. You should just take pictures, like, once a week. Make a video montage.
Every time I, like, do a video. Well, also, I forgot a few times to do the video.
Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah, I mean, that's fucking hard to do all the time.
Yeah, I did in the beginning. I did like do really well because I was like every time I did my shot right afterwards, I would go and record myself.
It was also like newer though at the time.
Yeah. But lately, after my shot, like we're usually like in a rush to like go somewhere or something or go to work or something. Those are
popular.
Oh, okay.
At least we do the podcast, so you get to hear yourself once a week.
True.
We just don't know what dates we actually recorded. We're recording this the day before it goes out. We've both been busy this week.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Also, shout out to Lynette.
Shout out Lynette. I don't know who that is.
She reached out to me on Instagram. We went to school together. I forget if it was middle school or high school. I think it was high school.
Okay.
But yeah, she reached out to me and basically was like, hey, I know this is random, but like, she's like, I listened to your podcast. And I was like, what?
That's so nice. Oh my God. I love you, Lynette. Your name's Lynette.
Yeah.
Okay. I love you, Lynette.
But yeah, she basically reached out and was like, oh, I love your podcast. And she was like, basically she wanted to like, interview me because she was had like a paper or something for her social. How do you say it?
I don't know. Sociology?
Yeah, that one.
Okay. I was like, I didn't go to college. You can't ask me these things.
I went, but it was like 4 years ago. But yeah, I guess she's in that class and like wanted to interview like LGBTQ plus members.
Hey! And, like,
just, I guess, talk about that.
Yeah.
And I was like, hell yeah, I'm down. And so cool. We set it up. And she interviewed me and just asked me a bunch of questions of, like, how it was coming out and stuff like that.
Yay!
Which is, like, it made me feel, like, I was kind of, like, taken back. And I was like, oh my God. Like, I don't know. It made me feel like, oh shit, like, I guess seen and, like, it made me feel special.
Yeah. And if anyone's, like, not out as a trans man, maybe people will hear about that and be like, oh my gosh, maybe I should come out.
Yeah, which I think is, like, super important. Which is just kind of like...
Representation matters.
Yeah, it does. Which is just kind of like, oh shit, like, wow.
That's so exciting. Look at you. But now tell her to share with everyone in her class.
She had to, like, change my name and everything, but...
Yeah. For some... Wait, what's the word? Privacy? I guess privacy? Yeah. Oh, that's so cool, though.
But yeah, it was really cool. I was like, wow. And one thing I remembered, like, way later that I should have, like, talked to her about, maybe she'll listen, but was, like, how using the bathroom is, like, a big struggle with trans people.
Yeah. That seems like it'd be scary, because some people are, like, fucking crazy about that.
It is fucking scary. And I've, even at work, like, I've experienced... Well, because I've used both bathrooms.
Mm-hmm. depending on the day.
Yeah, well, it's because sometimes I get really scared to go to the men's room.
Yeah.
So there was a few times that I would go in the women's restroom just when I wasn't feeling, like, confident. Mm-hmm. Or I didn't feel like I was passing. But I've experienced, like, a lot of, like, women in there, like, they'll do a double take.
Like, oh God! Like, so it's always, like, either bathroom you don't feel comfortable.
Exactly, and it's just kind of like, oh shit.
That's scary.
Because I was like washing my hands one time, mm-hmm. and this like lady walked in, and like saw me, and then walked out.
She thought she was like in the wrong bathroom.
Yeah, and then she walked back in, and then went to the restroom, and I was like, oh. So I was like,
oh no.
I was like, I think about it too much, and I actually, like, do pass more than I think I do.
Yeah, you do.
Because in those situations, I'm like, oh, shit, like, she literally walked out because she got scared. She was in the wrong restroom. And then she came back because she was like, oh, no, it is the right restroom.
You're just, like, the hardest critic of yourself.
I'm like, I am.
I feel like if I walked into the bathroom and saw you, I'd also be like, oh, shit, I'm in the wrong bathroom. It's embarrassing.
Oh, yeah, I mean, it's just scary, but I've realized that, you know, men don't care. Like, they actually, men are gross.
Yeah.
But I've noticed that, like, I just have to go in there and, like, not look anywhere, just go do my business and get out.
You don't just go in and, like, wave to everyone and be like, all right, how are you all doing today?
Yeah, exactly. You don't talk to nobody, you don't look at nobody. Like, you just go in, do your shit, and leave.
Where are you supposed to make friends? Not in the bathroom.
But yeah, I've realized that, so that's not what I do, or I just try not to, like, look down at the floor either, like, just walk straight in, like...
Be confident.
Yeah, be confident,
You're basically. Doing what you're supposed to be doing. It's not weird.
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, men are gross because a lot of them don't wash their hands.
I hate, like, knowing this.
A lot.
Have you stopped washing your hands now?
No, I wash my hands.
Thank you. Thank God. Blech. Well, it's now I'm going to think about that all the time.
So nasty. Like, so many. I'm like, ew.
I thought women's bathrooms were gross. They never flush. They try to, like, flush tampons and shit. Just nasty. How about just everyone's fucking gross and should not be allowed to use public bathrooms?
Well, I hate it, too, which is why I believe there should be gender-neutral bathrooms.
Yes.
Everywhere.
Yes.
Because... I don't know. I feel like it's just, like, it's super uncomfortable. Like, honestly, I've held my pee sometimes just because, like, I hate how uncomfortable it is to.
Oh.
Or just, like, when I'm feeling really dysphoric, like, I don't want to, like, go to either bathroom.
Yeah, you're not feeling comfortable in either one.
Yeah. So sometimes I, like, hold it until I get home, which is, like, really bad.
Yeah, you could get a UTI.
Yeah.
And those are not fun. Trust me.
I mean, most of the time, I do try to go to the one in the back room where the only employees go. Mm-hmm. But sometimes...
Is that, like a single bathroom?
Yeah, it's a single bathroom.
Oh, God.
Which sucks,
stressful.
But, yeah, it's definitely a struggle.
Everyone at gender-neutral bathrooms. And also, don't be a dick to people in the bathroom with you. You haven't had any bad experiences so far, right?
No.
Okay, good. I hope it continues that way.
I know. Well, that's why it's, like, super scary, like, using them in public, too, when it's, like, because I'm, like, I don't know who's in there, how they're going to react, like, it's scary. Like,
fucking crazy.
Yeah, they're, like...
People are insanely transphobic sometimes.
Which is why it's scary to be, like, so out and proud.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's, like, you don't know what... Who's transphobic, who's not.
Yeah. Oh, that's so scary.
Yeah.
I think it's interesting you said that people don't seem to care as much in the men's bathroom, because I feel like in general, from what I've noticed, it seems like men can be more transphobic. But then when it comes to bathrooms, women are fucking batshit insane.
Yeah, I've definitely, like, gotten way more looks in women's, but even when I was just presenting as lesbian.
Yeah.
Like, I can't tell you how many looks I got, like, from older ladies just, like, staring at me.
You're like, where do you want me to go?
Like, I was like, dude, like, I'm female. I know I dress like I'm, like, a boy, but, like.
They knew. Like... They knew inside. He's a boy.
I mean, yeah, I can. I've lost count of how many, like, looks I get, that it's kind of, like.
Oh, my gosh.
Honestly, like, it's kind of, like, what's the word? I don't know, like, I'm kind of used to it now. Like, when people stare at me, it's, like, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
I have noticed, though, that, like, I've gotten a lot more because my hair is, like, colored.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Because, I mean, I stand out now, like, way more than before.
That's true.
And so now I get even more looks, and then sometimes I'm like, what the fuck? But then I remember my hair is colored, so I'm like, oh.
You're like, oh, there's, look at me because I look good.
Yeah.
And then just, like, a little confidence in your step.
I do get a lot of compliments on my hair.
Oh, nice.
It's, like, fading. It's fading really nicely.
It looks really nice. See. It's, like, it's still kind of tealish, no?
Yeah, it's, like, a tealish, like, greenish.
It looks so cool. I like it. With this hairstyle he just did is not it, though.
It's because I tried to take off my hat and then put it back on, but it didn't work.
It's just sticking out. Looking interesting. What a skater boy. He said, see you later, boy.
But yeah, I'm, like, debating if I should reach out to her and talk to her about that. But I'm like, I did tell her a lot of information, so I don't know if she needs more.
I mean, I feel like a lot of people are fucking closed-minded about the bathroom thing, so it might not be the worst idea to reach out to her about it.
That's true.
And be like, if transphobic people think that they feel uncomfortable, imagine how uncomfortable it feels to people getting stares and shit.
Yeah, and that's part of, like, our everyday life, especially, mm-hmm. like, for, like, me, who I haven't, like, gotten any, like, surgeries, so I still, like, I look like a mix of both at times, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Which is like, it sucks.
You don't feel like you're passing completely.
Yeah, exactly. And I feel like that's why people stare, because they're like trying to figure out if I am or I'm not, or like what I am.
Oh my God. Life tip, everyone. Don't stare at people trying to figure out if they're a girl or a boy ever, please.
For real. It's such a big thing. It's so weird. Though. I've experienced it so much. Like, it's crazy how many times, like, and I could just feel it, like, sometimes I don't even have to turn, like, I just feel it. And it's funny because Alaris gets super defensive and she'll stare back at them, and I love
good
she's like, what you looking at?
Can't they just like look and remember what you look like? Why do they have to keep staring at you?
Just take a picture, please.
Just like take a picture with your mind, turn around and think about it. Don't actively fucking stare like a weirdo.
But yeah, I mean, I can only imagine how much more scarier it is for, like, trans women. Because I feel like women in the restrooms are way more, like, I guess, judgmental or, like, confrontational than men. Because men don't really give a shit. Because I've gone to the men's restroom a few times with, like, when we go out with Hilaris' cousin or, like, with Jesus. Because I'm like, sometimes I get scared and I'm like, I'll ask her cousin, one of her cousins. And he's like, he's super supportive. I'll be like, hey, can you like go to the restroom with me? He's like, oh yeah, of course. And then Jesus too, my brother-in-law. Nice. He's like, they're pretty like, yeah, I'll go with you. Or they're like, come on. Like, they kind of push me
fucked
to
if
it.
They said no.
Right? But like Jesus especially, he's like, come on, like, it's okay.
Let's and go then, shit yeah, together. We hold hands but under the stall.
But yeah, it's funny because like they're like, dude, no one cares, like just go in and like just basically they told me, you know, act confident, like you belong there. And I'm like, you're right. And like it's fine, like I have gotten like maybe one or two like older guys where they kind of look at me, but like it's what they don't say nothing, and they just say,
and if you're
acting
just confident, they probably don't even realize.
Yeah, true. But, I mean, I do remember, like, this one, like, older Asian guy, and he just kind of looked at me, but then he just went back to washing his hands, and, like, it was whatever.
I'm glad he washed his hands.
Yeah, right.
That's part of this whole story. Someone washed their hands, thank God.
But, yeah. I don't know. It's definitely something I don't think is talked about enough.
Yeah. Unless whenever it is like talked about, it's just talked about by shitty people.
True. About how they're, like, we don't need neutral gender bathrooms, blah, blah,
you guys
blah.
Should just shit your pants.
I know, it's like funny, like, how they are, like, so against it. And it's like, you do realize your home bathroom is gender neutral.
Yes. It's the weird shit. They're like, they don't want gender neutral, but they don't want them to use their bathrooms. I'm like, uh-huh. Do you want people to just shit themselves and just smell like shit all day? Like, what do you want here?
It's so, oh my God. It's so
what's
annoying.
The ideal situation? Like, you don't even know.
But yeah, she asked me, like, one question, like, what can society do to be more inclusive or, like, stuff like that. And I was like, be open-minded.
Yes.
Like, at least try, you know, and be respectful, because I feel like some people are very disrespectful because they don't believe in it or understand.
The best is people who don't believe in it, like you're Santa Claus or something.
Right? No,
like,
but
I'm standing right here, motherfucker.
It blows my mind that some people are like, no, I don't want to respect it because I don't believe in it, or like, I just don't
good God
respect what I don't know. But then it blows my mind because I'm like, so what you're telling me is like, any person you meet, you're just disrespect them?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, you usually respect someone you don't know, like, until they like disrespect you or like do anything,
do something to deserve disrespect.
Exactly. Which is like, it just blows my mind because they just, I don't know, I guess overlook that fact.
It's just them saying I'm transphobic and I'm trying to find an excuse for it,
right? I think so. But yeah, that's kind of what I told her. I was like, just I guess try to be more open-minded and be open at least to even having like those tough conversations to learn and like I guess understand more, because there is a lot of like misconceptions and like stereotypes, which is like most of them are not true.
You know what's weird is that people, women who are scared for trans women to use their bathrooms, it's like they're not even scared of trans women. They're afraid of cis men pretending to be trans women. I'm like, do you not see, like, you're afraid of cis men. What are you even talking about right now?
Yeah.
I'm like, trans women are just trying to go use the fucking restroom. Like, you're just afraid of men. Don't put that on them. That's your own issue. They just need to go pee.
For real.
Basically, mind your own fucking business in the bathroom. You know, maybe it would make it better for everyone. It is kind of weird that why do our public restrooms have like so much space under and over and in the doors. I like the restrooms that have like full on doors. I'm like, maybe if we had full on doors, everyone would be more comfortable.
True.
I don't know, but people are fucking weirdos. That's all I know. Don't be an asshole. Just go to the bathroom. Yeah. Don't even look at anyone. Look at the ground, bitches.
But yeah, shout out to Lynette.
Shout out, Lynette. You're our favorite. I don't know you, but...
No, she's cool. And then she was even telling me that her favorite episode was the sleep paralysis one. I'm like, oh, really? So you're a true fan. You've been here since the beginning.
Would not advise any of you to go back and listen to that one. I'm like, I wouldn't even remember what we spoke of, really.
Yeah, I don't remember either. But she said it was one of her favorite ones because she actually experienced sleep paralysis.
Oh.
And so I think she said we told stories of people that like also had it.
Oh,
so
yeah.
So she
yeah.
was like, oh, cool. Like, I'm not the only one, or like just related.
Oh my gosh. That's actually the coolest shit to hear, that someone related to a story we said.
Right?
What the fuck?
And that she actually listens.
This cool. is the coolest day.
Yeah, I was like, I mean, it came out of nowhere, and I was like, oh my god, that's cool, you know? Like, it makes me really happy when someone tells us, like, oh my god, we, like, listen to you.
Yeah. And no, it's like, actually stop. The best.
Yeah. I literally was, like, smiling, and I was telling Alaris, and she's like, oh my god, cool. And I was like, yeah.
Like, ah! I know, I tell people about it sometimes, too, and I'm like, oh, everyone wants to listen, just like, and we have something on my stream where if you type !! spooky, it will have the link to the podcast.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, and I send to people sometimes. I'm like, if you guys are interested. All right.
Yeah.
I have nothing going on, so I don't really have anything to share. I'm glad that you had so much, because mine's just nothing. My HelloFresh thing ended. I can't even talk about that anymore. So.
Damn.
I'm ready to just jump into the stories if you are.
Yeah, let's do
yeah.
it.
Yeah, wow, that's how boring my life is. Damn. Okay. All right. So this week I'm going to be talking about the Millbrook twins. And before starting, I did want to give a shout out to the Fall Line podcast. They spoke about Dana and Jeanette in the first season of their show, and they helped me fill in like a lot of blanks in my story. I only listened to the first few episodes of theirs because I was trying to figure out like the day they went missing more, and they helped me fill in so much blanks. So shout out them. Shout out. So Danette and Jeanette Millbrook are fraternal twins born on April 2nd, 1974 in Augusta, Georgia, to parents John Millbrook and Mary Louise Sturgis. They are two of either 7 or 8 children, depending on the source, including one younger sister named Shantae and one older sister named Asiander. John and Louise were no longer together, and like as far as I could tell, the girls lived solely with their mom, though they had somewhat of a relationship with their dad. It sucks because, I mean, for reasons I'll get to, I don't know that much about their their family life and stuff. So at 15, Jeanette was 5'4" and 125 pounds, and Danette was 5'6" and 130 pounds, and was described as being bow-legged. Both girls are black with brown eyes, pierced ears, and at the time, shoulder-length black hair styled in Jerry curls. They each have a scar near their belly buttons from a hernia removal operation performed soon after they were born. The girls are pretty close to their immediate and large extended family, but despite having regular sleepovers with cousins, they rarely actually left their own home and were considered to be homebodies. Jeanette herself in particular was pretty quiet and shy, often leaving friendly Danette to have to stand up for her twin if someone was saying anything to her. One cousin described them as good girls, girls who didn't know much about the rough streets. The girls attended Lucy Laney High School in Augusta. They're actually in separate grades for unclear reasons, but I believe that Danette may have been held back a year. And they previously attended different schools for a year while Danette received more intensive education. They're both known to be good kids, definitely not troublemakers, and their only history of any, like, misbehavior was a single fight that was a result of Jeanette being repeatedly bullied at a bus stop, and Danette came and, like, stood up for her. They'd never run away before, and there was really no reason for them to want to. Jeanette had a cat who she never would have left behind, and Danette had a daily seizure medication that she had to take. Sunday, March 18th, 1990 started out like any normal day. The Milbig family had attended church, and the pastor gave Louise a few dollars to buy her children lunch. They're miles away from any grocery stores and didn't have a car, so there wasn't many options as to what to eat. Louise sent the twins down the road to the local fast food restaurant, Church's Chicken, to get enough food for themselves and their siblings. When they got back home, they told their mom that a man in a white van had followed them for part of their walk. She asked for more detail, but they didn't have much to share, though they said that he hadn't followed them into their apartment complex. Louise looked outside and didn't see the car, and no more is known about this man. They also played it down quite a bit. I think that they didn't want her to worry, or like, I mean, I could see myself. I've thought that this has happened a few times, and then afterwards I'm like, I'm probably just exaggerating. They probably weren't actually following me, you know? Yeah. So they played down so much that their mom actually forgot that this happened for quite a while. The Millbrook family had recently moved to a new apartment in a new school district, and while the girls would be allowed to finish out the school year at their old school, the bus that they usually took would not be able to pick them up anymore. Realizing this meant that they would need to take a city bus to school the next week, and with Louise unable to give them any money, around 3 p.m. they walked about 2 miles over to around where they used to live to borrow some money from their godfather. Shantae asked if she could walk with them, but the twins said no. I don't think that this was like for any like suspicious or weird reason. They probably just didn't want to hang out with their 12-year-old little sister that they were around all day. They're 15. Yeah. Like, they probably just wanted to be alone. They successfully made it to their godfather's house, and he gave them $20 for the bus and a little extra to buy themselves a treat, too. They next headed to go visit their cousin, Juanita. When it came time to leave, they asked her to walk home with them and perhaps stay the night, as she had plenty of times before, not normally on school nights, but I think it had happened. But her mom wouldn't allow it, as she was concerned that they'd still be walking when it got dark. They made another stop to see their older sister, Aciander, at her home and stayed for about 15 minutes, requesting again that she walk with them, but she said no, as she'd recently given birth. She had a feeling that they really didn't want to walk alone, but like, she'd literally just given birth, so she wasn't really good to walk 2 miles and then 2 miles back. The rest of the girl's family later said that it was extremely unusual for them to be asking for company home multiple times. The twins continued on to a local pump and shop gas station on the corner of 12th Street and Martin Luther King Jr. Boulevard and bought chips and soda with the extra money they'd gotten from their godfather. The clerk working that shift, Gloria, recognized the twins and said that they seemed happy enough and didn't seem to be acting out of the ordinary. She was the last person to see or speak to Jeanette and Jeanette at around 4:30 p.m. At the time, Jeanette was wearing a blue pullover, a white turtleneck with a beige skirt, white tights, and white sneakers. She was still wearing the clothes that she'd worn to church earlier that day. Jeanette was wearing a white t-shirt with a picture of Mickey Mouse on it, white jeans, and black shoes. When the twins failed to arrive home before dark, their family grew concerned. It was unlike the girls to stay out this late. Louise and Shantae left to go look for the twins, already checking things like bushes and abandoned buildings, as they'd heard horror stories about local women being, like, assaulted or killed. They arrived at the pump and shop, where the girl's older sister had informed Louise they were heading to. The clerk, Gloria, told Louise what she'd seen, which unfortunately was not much. She wasn't sure if the girls had left in a car or even which direction they'd gone. She said that she'd looked away for a moment, and by the time she turned back, they were already out of sight. As they made their way back home, they checked more areas as they walked. When they arrived home, they tried to report Jeanette Dinez missing, but were told over the phone that they would have to wait 24 hours before making a report, just to see if the twins came back on their own. But they did not. The next day, Louise called the police again to try and report them as missing. This time, they took her call, and she told police about the girls had been wearing when they disappeared. After this call, she didn't hear from the police again for about another week, when an investigator was finally able to go and speak to them. The first report in their case, which was likely taken by this officer, was full of mistakes. Part of the girls' names were incorrect, the wrong streets were written down, and the order of events wasn't even accurate. And then it was another full week before a second investigator stopped by. Not much is known about the beginning of the investigation, as the original police file has been lost, but the girls were believed to just be runaways. And despite having, like, they had no money. They had literally no reason to run away. They went, and if you had $20 to run away, they'd just gone from your godfather too. Why would you be like, we're just going to get chips and a soda right now? I'm like, yeah, they'd probably use that $20 thing else. Danette probably would have taken her fucking daily seizure medication. It just makes no sense. The twins' family disputed the runaway theory and were all agreed that no matter how tired they would have been from a long walk, there was absolutely no way that the girls would willingly accept a ride from a stranger. So if they did receive a ride, it had to either be from a familiar face or by force. There's seemingly no mentions of them disappearing in articles or TV reports around this time. There was also some confusion, as one of their sisters was frequently mistaken as being one of the twins, making it seem as though they weren't missing when they still were. The case was passed on to a juvenile investigator who closed the girls' case when they turned 17, because according to them, they'd reach an age that if found, they could no longer be legally forced to go home. Which I feel like I've never seen before. We've talked about so many people who went missing as, like, kids or teenagers. And they're not like, oh, they turned 17, they're not missing anymore.
What?
Yeah. I'm like, you could still have them be missing. It doesn't make any sense. Interestingly, though, my impression, based on what I read, this is all kind of fucking confusing. But my impression was that the same investigator, who has since passed away, like, told Louise that he would continue trying to help find the girls, even though he was the one that closed the case. I'm like, so you admit that they're missing. Which one is it?
Okay.
And this is when it gets even weirder. Another original investigator claims that he was told by that same case officer that the girls had been found, and that's why their cases were closed. But this was not true, and Louise was never even told that this was the reason. Regardless of what really happened, Jeanette and Danette were removed from the National Registry of Missing Children, and their case was closed for the next 20 years.
Sheesh.
Though police seemingly had given up, the Milberg family had not. They still held out hope that they could find the girls and would frequently call the sheriff's department over the years to follow up and see if there were any news about the twins. Over the years, they were given several more reasons as to why the case may have been closed. One being that it was believed that the girls had been removed from their home, placed in foster care, and adopted. Upon later further investigation, it was found that this was not true. And it was highly likely the police had gotten confused because this situation had happened to a relative of the family who had the same last name. And they just, like, saw Millbrook and were like, oh my god, that's them. Case closed.
What the fuck?
Yeah, how does that even happen? Where you're like, they're not missing. They were in foster care and got adopted. And I'm like, can you, like, go talk to these kids that got adopted and be like, hey, are you Jeanette and Danette? Because I bet you're not. This realization and many phone calls from the Millbrooks led to the case finally being reopened in 2013, with a newly elected sheriff being quoted as saying, "We think a terrible injustice has been done for the last 20 years. We don't think, we know. We know."
Mm-hmm.
Though the case was reopened, it had now been so long that there weren't really any leads to follow. While it's unknown what exactly happened to Jeanette and Danette Millbrook, there are some theories. One is that they were the victims of serial killer Joseph Patrick Washington, who was active in their area at the time of their disappearance. There are a few reasons that he's considered by some to be a possible suspect. Washington began kidnapping women as early as 1989 and had even committed an abduction in the areas where the girls used to live. Using three different cars, I'm not sure what kind, I don't know if any of them were like a white van, but he would specifically target black women with short hair. He would then sexually assault the women and in some cases murder them. Washington was later sentenced to 17 consecutive life sentences in 1995 for abducting and sexually assaulting 5 women, 2 of whom he ended up murdering. He was suspected in at least one other murder, but died in prison in 1999 before he could go on trial for it. It's unclear to me if he's, like, actually considered a suspect or, like, if they can even do anything about that. This whole case is, like, actually incredibly hard to find out, like, what is actually happening here is unclear. And I can't imagine how frustrating that is for their family.
Yeah.
But as if it wasn't terrifying enough knowing that serial killer was on the loose at the time of the girl's disappearance, apparently he may have had a bit of contact with them as well. So John Millbrook, the twins' dad, had apparently lived a life of alleged crime and drugs. It's unclear based on what I could find, but somehow he had known or been affiliated, however loosely, with Washington.
Sus.
Yeah. While it's unclear if the people John hung around had anything to do with the disappearance of his daughters, Louise did seem to have some skepticism of him. She said that when she first told her ex how their twins were missing, he just said that she shouldn't be looking for them because they were with some man. She doesn't believe. Yeah. Like, how dismissive of that? Your teenage 15-year-old fucking twin daughters are missing and you're like, they're just with some dude. That's why I'm like, I know he had a little bit of a relationship with them, but based on that line, at least, I do not think that they were close.
No, definitely not. Or,
yeah.
Well, since their dad knew Joseph, does that mean, do you think they knew him too? So they're more likely to, like, accept a ride from him?
I don't know. It wasn't, like, totally clear how they knew each other. So I don't know if, like, they ran in the same circles. If they, like, I don't think that they, like, hung out or were friends or anything. I imagine that they just, like, would go places and, like, see each other sometimes, you know?
Hmm.
Like, maybe acquaintances. So I doubt that the girls would have known him, but I'm not totally sure. It's, like, shit like this didn't even become clear till, like, years later, too. So it's fucking weird.
Damn.
Louise, though, doesn't believe that John would have harmed them. But asked recently, she also said she doesn't necessarily think that he would help them out, either. While contacting associates of John during the making of the following podcast around 2017, a man named Ernest Vaughns reached out to the host. Vaughns had known John back in the day, and the two had committed crimes together. John actually went to prison for a few years in 1997 for helping to dispose of a body in 1996 after Vaughns had killed someone. Just weeks after committing this murder, Vaughns killed another man who he believed knew too much about the first murder. He was convicted of murder for both these cases and has since been sentenced to life in prison, which is where he wrote his letter from. In Vaughn's letter, he wrote, "You asked a few questions in which I don't mind answering, but what if I told you that I know where you could find them? Can you help me? As you may already know, I've been incarcerated for 22 years and just came up for parole." While the sheriff's office was given the letter and encouraged to follow up, at least at that time, they did not. Former prosecutor Laura Coates and former homicide detective Paige Reynolds, who had been looking into the case for a documentary on the girls for Oxygen, instead stepped in. The two spoke to Vaughns, and he told them that John's home had been something of like a base of operations for a drug business. He claimed that one day when he was around 12 years old, there was a party at the home and the twins were present, and one or both of them was like smoking weed and drinking a little bit. He then said that some of the men at this party began to sexually assault one of the twins, and the other one stepped in to help her sister. According to Vaughns, one of them dudes hit her. I guess she fell and hit the table. I think she bust her head open on the table. I don't think them girls alive after that. Coates and Reynolds informed the police of this story, and in turn the sheriff sent investigators to go interview Vaughns themselves. While this seemed like a promising lead, and officers did corroborate parts of his story, they believe that he was actually describing a different crime and did not truly know what had happened to the twins. He did give one location too, where he thought that their bodies might have been dumped if they were killed. But based on what I read, I don't even think that they searched it. I think that they were like, oh, he's not credible. We don't need to search it. Which is insane to me. I'm like, if I would search anywhere in the world... Like, I don't care where the fuck they're saying. I don't care if it's a waste of time. Like, try at least.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, any interviews with John Millbrook since the reopening of the case were not productive, as he suffered from dementia and later ended up passing away. In 1993, the skeletal remains of an unidentified Black woman were found in Aiken County, South Carolina. It was believed that she was a murder victim who had been killed sometime between 1990 or 1992. While the age isn't exactly right, it's estimated that the Jane Doe had been in her early 20s. The reconstruction of her face bore a striking enough resemblance to Jeanette that the girl's family actually called police to say that they thought it could be the missing teenager. The family was told that following the examination of the bones, it could not have been one of the twins, which they, of course, thinks weird because as far as I could tell, they didn't even have DNA to compare it to. They just looked at the bones and were like, it's not them. I don't know how they came to that conclusion, but I do want to show you the picture comparing the reconstruction to Jeanette. Okay. I just sent you the picture of the reconstruction compared to Jeanette.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. It does look like her.
It does.
I mean, as much as a reconstruction could look, we all know they're a little off. It doesn't necessarily mean, like, it is her, but, like, the one that I sent you the picture is from a petition on change.org to compare the DNA from Jeanette to the Jane Doe found. I don't think it's the biggest waste of time to at least try.
Yeah, that's weird.
I don't know. I'm like, I don't know how much it costs to test DNA, but y'all are being stingy. Make it happen.
Apparently it's too much.
Apparently. There are some other theories about what happened to twins. Like, maybe they were sex trafficked, potentially. Maybe just like a random predator had picked them up. And going back to the white van that the girls said had been following them home from getting food the day they went missing, Shantae herself may have recognized it. So when asked about it fairly recently, she said that the only person she could remember driving a van like that in their old neighborhood was a Black man who lived near them that may have been nicknamed Raper Man Charles.
Huh.
That's not an ideal nickname for a person driving around in a white van. But as far as I can tell, there's like no other information on this man. He's considered to be a suspicious person in the case, or even what his real name is. In the past several years, there have been a few more updates and more attempts to bring awareness to the case. In 2017, the Millbrook family spoke to the sheriff's office about collecting familial DNA samples to utilize if they had remains to test them against the Aiken County Doe. In 2019, Oxygen released their documentary on the girls, which unfortunately I could not find for free anywhere online. I don't even think I could find it for money online, which was frustrating. In 2021, the Millbrook family hired a private investigator to take on the case of the missing twins. Shantae Millbrook has always been a very vocal advocate to find her missing sisters, and she's also been very openly critical of both the original and current investigations by local police. So hiring a PI could prove to be helpful for the family. If found alive, Jeanette and Danette would now be 47 years old. When spoken to about them, their mom said, "What I want them to know is I love my girls. I don't believe they're dead." There's an $11,000 reward for information leading to Jeanette and Danette Millbrook's whereabouts. Anyone with information about them is urged to call 404-590-2975. Yes, that's it for my story. And as far as I could tell, I think I read this on a couple of sites, and I don't know how to fact check it. They might be the only set of missing twins that is still missing.
Oh, wow.
It's not common for twins to go missing together. And especially not common for them to be missing for 3 years. How the fuck? It just fucking trips me out that twin sisters went missing together and still haven't been found. It's incredibly frustrating.
Trippy.
Mm-hmm. And that they closed their case for 20 years. I'd heard about this case. Like, we have a notebook that I like write down ideas for the podcast. Oh. And I've had their names written down for a while because I read a little bit about them. I just read that they were twins that went missing. I didn't realize until I started actually looking into it this week that their case was closed for 20 years. That's so fucked.
Bizarre.
Yeah, and it was basically just closed on hearsay. No one even knew exactly why. They were like, oh, they were found. Oh, they're in foster care. Oh, they are 17. They don't even know which reason it is. It's ridiculous. But anyway, I will be posting pictures on Instagram related to them. I'll also be sure to post a picture comparing the Aiken County dough to Jeanette, because that one is crazy. I won't say, like, for sure it's her, because I know there's been cases we've talked about in the past where, like, I don't remember exactly which episode it was, but I remember there was one where people were convinced that this one Jane Doe was somebody else. And then it turned out that they actually got the race of the Jane Doe wrong. So it was someone completely different. Sometimes the reconstructions just look like people, but damn, at least fucking try. Anyway, that is it for my story.
All right. So I'm going to talk about the disappearance of Kyron Richard Horman. Kyron was born on September 9th, 2002 in Portland, Oregon, to Desiree Young and Kane Horman. Kane was an engineer for Intel.
Oh.
Yeah.
Damn.
The couple divorced just 8 months into Desiree's pregnancy with Kyron.
That's rough timing.
Yeah.
Oh my god.
And I guess she cited irreconcilable differences. Oh,
irreconcilable.
Irrecon.
I'm not sure anymore now either. I'm like, fuck. It's one of those words that I just read a lot and never say out loud.
Whatever. Anyways.
Differences.
Differences. But yeah, after they got divorced and like Kyron was born, they had shared custody.
Okay.
Up until 2004, because I guess Desiree was diagnosed with kidney failure, and she basically had to be at the hospital, like,
oh,
a good majority, basically, like, 24-7.
Yeah.
So Kane took full custody over Kyron. But, I mean, they ended, and they, I don't think they had, like, they ended their relationship, but, like, they still had, she still had a good relationship with her son. Like,
yeah,
he would take.
They just broke up because they weren't fit together. It wasn't.
Yeah,
like,
exactly.
Bad blood.
But like, he didn't like keep Desiree out of his life either. Like,
okay, that's good.
Yeah,
that'd be fucked up. His mom,
right?
The kid's mom's in the hospital.
That's so
like,
sad.
Not visiting her.
Yeah, that'd be sad. But yeah, Kane ended up getting married to a woman named Terry Moulton. She was a substitute teacher originally from Roseburg, Oregon.
Hmm.
Kane became romantically involved with Terry around 2001 when he and Desiree were in the midst of divorcing.
Ooh.
Yeah. Damn.
That's fast. It's a fast little rebound.
Right. So yeah, they were like together for like 6 years, and then they got married in 2007 while visiting Kauai, Hawaii.
It is very beautiful there. It's a good place to randomly get married.
Never been, so I wouldn't know.
You'd get remarried to Laris if you go.
Oh,
trust,
yeah?
Trust.
And yeah, the next year in December of 2008, Terry gave birth to their daughter, Kiara. I think Kyron was, he was like 5.
Okay.
Yeah, it's kind of short. There's not much. There's more
sad
theories.
Yeah.
But yeah, on June 4th, 2010, Kyron was taken to Skyline Elementary School by his stepmother, Terry, who then stayed with him a while he attended a science fair. Terry stated that she left the school at around 8:45 a.m. and that she last remembered seeing Kyron walking down the hall to his first class. However, Kyron was never seen in his first class and was instead marked as absent that day.
I need to know everything about the school. I'm like, is this indoor or outdoor? Like, where the fuck's this hallway? Is it next to a fucking street? Like, oh my god. Okay.
Terry states to police that after leaving the school at 8:45, she ran errands to two different grocery stores until about 10 in the morning. Between then and 11:30-ish, she stated that she was driving her daughter around town in an attempt to use the motion of the vehicle to soothe her toddler's earache.
Oh.
Terry said that she then went to a local gym and exercised until about 12:40, and by 1:30-ish, she had arrived home and posted photos of Kyren at the science fair on Facebook from that, like, same morning.
She's posting pictures of him on Facebook, not knowing that he was marked as absent and was nowhere to be found.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know why that's like, oh, that's terrifying.
At 3:30 p.m., Terry and her husband, Kane, walked with their daughter, Kiara, to the bus stop to meet Kyren. Once the bus driver arrived, he told them that the boy had not boarded the bus and to call the school to ask about his whereabouts. Terry did so, only to be informed by the school secretary that, as far as anyone knew, Kyren had not been at school since earlier that day and had been marked absent.
Okay, aren't you supposed to call parents and double check when your kid's absent? Isn't that a thing?
Yeah.
Cool, just not in this situation then.
But I mean, I'm not exactly sure when that started, or has it always been a thing?
I don't know if it's always been a thing. It also might just be school by school basis, honestly.
I think so.
But this should be a thing everywhere. There's a lot of cases whenever I was trying to decide who to talk about where shit like this happened, and their parents just don't know for several hours.
I mean, I think it depends. I feel like it's a thing now, but like maybe back then it wasn't a thing yet.
I don't know.
But now they're like
fucking thing.
No, now some schools are super extra. Like my sister, they literally call my mom like 4 times a day because they'll call even if like my sister's late to class.
That's good, honestly. So maybe they have to be like good timeline.
But like, yeah. So I think it does depend on the school.
Yeah, probably.
But yeah, so realizing that the boy was missing, the secretary called 911. Search efforts for Kyren were extensive and primarily focused on a 2-mile radius around Skyline Elementary and on Sabi Island, which is approximately 6 miles away. Law enforcement did not disclose their reasons for searching the area where they did, which included a search of Sabi Island Bridge. But I mean, I think you can imagine why. For his body.
Oh.
Yeah.
Wow, they're already looking for a body?
I mean, fuck. They had to be thorough, I guess. Yeah,
that's just so fast.
On June 9th, 2010, 5 days after Kyren's disappearance, the Herman family, who initially refused to speak with the media, released a statement. I mean, but it was like it says they released a statement, but like the way it's said, it's like someone else said it.
Someone else said it for them.
Yeah.
Okay.
Kyren's family would like to thank people for their support and interest in finding their son. The outpouring of support and continued effort strengthens their hope. We need folks to continue to assist us in our goal. Please search your properties, cars, outbuildings, sheds, etc. Also, check with neighbors and friends who may be on vacation and or may need assistance in searching. There are a lot of resources here to help you search, so please don't stop. It is obviously a difficult time, and they want to speak to the public so you can hear it from Kyren's family as they come together to share a message. Their objective is to keep focus on Kyren and not about anything else.
Mm-hmm.
On June 12th, that was about 8 days after his disappearance.
Okay.
Around 300 trained rescuers were on ground searching wooded areas near the school. The search for Kyren, which spanned over 10 days, was the largest in Oregon history, which included over 1,300 searchers from Oregon, Washington, and California.
Oh my god.
Which is like crazy.
Yeah, what the fuck?
A reward of $25,000 was posted for information leading for the discovery of Kyren. In late July of 2010, the reward was expanded to $50,000.
Jesus.
Sheesh. In late June 2010, in the midst of the search, Kane was reportedly told by investigators that Terry had offered their landscaper, Rodolfo Sanchez, a lot of money to kill her husband.
Wait, what?
Plot twist.
Wait. The stepmom was going to pay him to kill the dad.
Yeah, that's what they were saying. Yeah.
This threw me off so much that I'm like, wait. I'm misunderstanding, clearly. What the fuck?
Plot twist.
Oh my god.
There's a lot of twists in here.
Okay.
Rodolfo testified in a deposition that Terry approached him to help her kill her husband in January of 2010, 5 months before Kyron's disappearance.
Why?
In her own deposition, Terry denied the charge. Investigators convinced Rodolfo to confront Terry while wearing an audio surveillance device, but they were unable to obtain any evidence and could not make an arrest.
Damn, this sounds like it didn't happen then.
Well.
I mean, if it didn't, I'm imagining how funny it would be for him to be wearing a wire and he's just trying to get her to say something. She's like, the fuck are you talking about?
Right. Or she's smart and just denied it all.
I know.
On June 28th of 2010, Kane filed for divorce and obtained a restraining order against Terry.
Wow.
The divorce was granted, and Terry was eventually granted supervised visitation with her daughter.
Damn, what the fuck?
Yeah.
This is a really shocking turn of events happening right now.
Oh, it's gonna get even shocking.
Okay.
More shocking.
Shockinger. I didn't even catch on. I was like, wow, I love that word.
During this time, Terry failed two separate polygraph examinations regarding Kyron's disappearance. In August of 2010, it was announced that the law enforcement were searching for an individual allegedly seen by two witnesses sitting inside Terry's truck outside Skyline Elementary the day of the disappearance. So Bruce McCain, a former sheriff of Multnomah County Sheriff's Office, told CBS News, the identity of that second person, if he or she existed, could be critical in determining what happened to Kyron after 9 a.m. on June 4th.
Oh my god.
Meanwhile, a grand jury subpoenaed several friends of Terry, including a woman named Dee Dee Speicher.
Okay.
Whom Desiree and Kane described as having, quote, been in a close communication with Terry, and providing Terry with support and advice that is not in the best interests of our son.
Oh, what? The fuck?
Desiree and Kane said that. So, Kyron's parents.
Yeah. I'm just trying to think, what kind of advice could this friend be giving her that's like, would not help a missing child?
I don't know. According to law enforcement, Dee Dee was extremely cooperative and allowed a search of her property and car, as well as enduring 3 hours of questioning from detectives.
Well.
On the day of Kyron's disappearance, Dee Dee abruptly left her work gardening for a homeowner on Germantown Road in northwest Portland around 11:30 a.m. and returned about 90 minutes later. She also allegedly helped Terry purchase an untraceable cell phone. During this time, Dee Dee told journalists, there's this horror that my friend is going through. If I thought for a second that she was capable of foul play, I would have not been there. She would have not been my friend in the first place.
I'm so confused. What the fuck? You don't think she's capable of doing shitty things? Why were you buying her an untraceable cell phone? What happened?
In early August 2010, both Desiree and Kane were subpoenaed and testified during the grand jury hearing, as well as the school principal of Skyline Elementary. In December 2010, it was reported by a local Oregon newspaper that the grand jury had yet to provide compelling evidence yielding a potential indictment. By November 2009...
We've gone back in time now.
By November 29th, 2010, search efforts in Kyron's case had cost an estimated of $1.4 million, according to the county's commissioners, and yielded 4,257 tips.
Oh my gosh.
It's a lot.
Holy shit.
Well, I mean, maybe it seems a lot to us, but it could
seems be. Seems like a lot to people who don't know.
Exactly.
I know that's a big number.
Yeah. On June 1st, 2012, Desiree filed a civil lawsuit against Terry, claiming that she was responsible for the disappearance of Kyren. The lawsuit attempted to prove that Terry had kidnapped Kyren on the day of he disappeared. Desiree sought $10 million in damages. On August 15, 2012, a federal court judge denied a motion by Terry to delay the lawsuit.
Damn. He's like, nah, bitch, you paying up.
In early October of 2012, Dee Dee refused to answer any of the 142 questions posed to her during a deposition regarding Desiree's lawsuit.
Whoa.
Among these questions were several regarding Dee Dee's whereabouts on June 4th, 2010.
Assuming she just pled the fifth on everything?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And her contact with Terry that day. She also declined to identify a photo of Kyren, whether she had met him before or not, or whether she knew her father came.
Wow, she's really committed to this not answering anything, huh? Mm-hmm. My God.
During testimony provided by Kane in a separate hearing that same year, he stated that police had told them they have more probable cause to think Terry Horman was involved with Kyren's disappearance than they did 2 years ago.
Oh my gosh.
On July 30th, 2013, it was announced that Desiree had dropped the lawsuit against Terry so as to not interfere with an ongoing police investigation. In May 2017, it was reported by Portland station KGW that a secret grand jury panel continued to hear evidence in Kyren's disappearance and had convened on multiple occasions. During the report, Kyren's case was described as still active and ongoing. 2 months later, in July 2017, law enforcement conducted further searches along Skyland Boulevard, but the searches yielded no results. In June 2018, Desiree posted on the official Find Kyren Horman Facebook page, "Stay tuned, something big is coming, I promise you."
The fuck?
But I don't know what she meant by that. They were just, I don't know, trying to find more evidence against Terry because they really believe it was Terry, and I low-key believe it was Terry.
Yeah, I'm starting to believe it was Terry.
You might even more so after this.
Oh my god.
So, in 2016, Terry appeared.
She peed everywhere. It's so embarrassing.
She appeared as a guest on Dr. Phil, during which she told
Phil... Why the fuck was Dr. Phil inviting her? This guy, I swear to god. He's like, you might have killed a child. Come on the show, let's talk about it.
Yeah. She told Dr. Phil, "I was advised from the beginning by law enforcement, by my husband at the time, by attorneys in the beginning, not to say anything. I've always wanted to. I've asked multiple times to speak out and have not been allowed." She denied having any involvement in Kyren's disappearance and also stated her belief was that he was kidnapped, adding, "There was a man in a white pickup truck, Ford, parked on the Highway 30 at the 7-Eleven, which is not near the school. He was acting very strangely, and he was addressed by one of the employees because he had been pacing back and forth in front of the 7-Eleven for about an hour." Which is like...
not even near the school, though.
Yeah.
And they live in... didn't you say they live in, like, Portland?
Mm-hmm.
That would be like me being someone missing, like, around where I live, and I go downtown San Diego, and I'm like, someone was acting really weird downtown. It's probably them. I'm like, Portland's a big city. People are going to be fucking weird there.
Yeah, I don't know.
Sounds like she's just trying to find anyone to be like, well, this guy was acting weird.
Yeah. There was also a book released in May of 2020, written by Rebecca Morris. It's called Boy Missing, The Search for Kyren Horman. The book claims Kyren's regular bus driver, a classmate, and two classmates' family members witnessed Kyren walk through the school parking lot with Terry and her infant daughter on June 4th, 2010. Sus.
What the fuck?
Yeah, so they saw him leave with her.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's kind of like hard.
Why did they not say that before? Or did they say that to the investigation before?
I think they did, and that's why.
Oh, that's police... how they got out of the book.
Sorry. No, I mean, they knew before the book, but I think that's why police like talked to Kane and they were like, yeah, we have more reason to believe Terry's involved. Because of all these tips.
I don't know why she would want to. It's like she wanted to kill the dad. So she settled for the son instead? Like,
yeah, I guess.
I mean, some people are just shitty. Let's not forget that.
I don't know. Maybe she like did want to kill the husband at first, but then I guess what really was the problem was her stepson.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Like she thought that, I don't know, he was like in the way.
Yeah.
That's so weird. I'm not even convinced that's her, if it could have been someone else.
I know, he could have been kidnapped.
Yeah, because, I mean, she was acting weird for sure. But I won't judge people too much on how they were acting, because I'm like, I don't know how the fuck I would ever act. But it does sound like a thing that lawyers and attorneys would say, where they'd be like, don't talk to anyone about anything.
Yeah.
But I don't fucking know. It's fucking weird. And people said that they might have seen someone else in the car with her. I truly do not know what to believe here.
Yeah, I don't know. He was only 7 years old when he disappeared.
Oh my god.
What the fuck? And it's been 12 years.
Jesus Christ.
Right. 2010. Yeah.
Yeah.
2022.
What the fuck?
But yeah. They like did one of those progression photos.
Yeah.
I was going to send it to you, but I lost it.
I'll find that and I'll put that one on Instagram.
Yeah, it's just really sad.
Oh my gosh. I looked him up. And the last known photograph was taken within an hour of his disappearance.
Yeah. That's why I said it was that morning. It was the picture she posted on Facebook from that morning was the last photo.
That's so scary.
He'd be 19. Or he is 19.
Yeah. That's so sad. What the fuck happened?
I don't know. But his mom is still very... what's it called? Like activist? Advocate? Oh. No, advocate. I think it's advocate.
Okay.
For like finding him. And she has said like, I'll never stop fighting to like either for Terry to tell the truth or like to find him basically.
Mm-hmm. That's great. 2010, whenever you're first saying it, I was like, oh, this wasn't that long ago. Because in my head, I didn't realize that's been 12 years. This has been a really long time.
Yeah. It doesn't seem like that far away, but it is.
It is, yeah. He'd be a teenager. Like, a late teenager.
Yeah, he'd be 19.
What the fuck? Yeah, I'll be uploading all the pictures, everyone. Don't worry.
But yeah, I don't know. It's interesting. It's like, you don't know what to believe.
I don't know what to believe. Because, like, obviously, Terry seems suspicious as shit. But I'm also thinking of, like, randomly, this isn't related, really, Faith Hedgepeth, like how she was murdered and everyone was like so convinced that her roommate was involved because her roommate was acting weird and not answering questions, and now they've actually found the guy who did and it was just a random dude.
Yeah, that's true.
So I'm like, some that people could, just act weird.
That could be with like Terry's case, like she's just
like no weird. One knows the appropriate way to react if your stepchild goes missing.
Yeah.
So I don't know. It could be because she's suspicious. It could just be she's a weirdo. There's no way to tell. Both of these cases are going to be bugging me so much. I was like trying to fall asleep last night and all I could think about was like Jeanette and Jeanette too. And I was like, I even kept saying to Robert too, I'm like, how did twins go missing and they're still missing?
Yeah.
Like two people. In years, like he was seen in his school hallway. Like what the fuck?
Yeah, I don't know. It's just sad.
Yeah. So the main theory is that his stepmom was involved.
Yeah, that's the main theory.
Oh my gosh.
The stepmom and her friend Dee Dee somehow
did something.
You know, that like she helped her out or something.
Oh my gosh. hopefully we find out what happens. What happened?
I hope so.
I was going recently and looking up like all the people I've talked about who have been missing to be like, is there anything new on anyone? And not yet, which is kind of upsetting.
Uh-huh.
Sad. Talking about missing people is sad. Probably important though, bringing awareness to their cases.
Yeah, it's good to talk about.
Yeah. Did you have anything else to add?
No.
All right. Well, if anyone would like to email us, like, episode suggestions, anything about the episodes, like what you think, you can at thespookyshit.pod@gmail.com. Our Twitter and Instagram are spookyshit_pod, and our website is spookyshit-pod.com. I guess. Thank you for listening. I'm going to upload pictures, like all the age progression, comparing the Aiken County Doe to Jeanette, Millbrook, everything will be on our Instagram and Twitter if you want to go check those out.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's it for this week, I guess. Next week, I believe we're doing creepypasta, so a little bit of a break from the heaviness for a second.
Yeah. No, just spooky.
Yeah, it's nice to have our monthly breaks, which is creepypasta. It's less dark. But yeah, thank you for listening, and we'll talk to you all next week. Bye!
Bye! Hey.